On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, today's episode of the podcast is going to be another group episode. I'm going to have the guys introduce themselves and then we'll get right in. So we'll start John and then we'll go Ben and then we'll dive into what we're going to talk about.
All right, my name is John Perry. I'm going into my second year with the Texas Rangers as their rehab strength conditioning coach. Before that, for the last 2 years before that, I was with the New York Mets working at an affiliate. And then before that, I spent a few years at the college level working at University of Georgia, Arkansas Little Rock, and Georgia Tech, working with baseball all the way through, basically for the past 6 years straight. Baseball's been the primary for me, so passionate about it. Love it. Yeah.
My name's Ben Chadwick. Going into my seventh year with the Red Sox. I'll be in AAA this year, but I also ran the rehab from 2016 to 2018.
And that's going to lead us into our topic of discussion today. We are going to discuss rehab protocols, not necessarily specific injuries per se, unless we do end up getting into that, but more just the process of going through rehab with players and how you deal with setbacks and the mental side of things, and really just the whole holistic approach and outlook of rehab. And so I'm going to start us off with a really broad, probably loaded question, but what are your steps to determining a plan of action / path to success for a player post-injury? So maybe start, guy gets injured, and next day he comes in. Who are you talking to in terms of ATCs, PTs, doctors, whoever? And then once you guys kind of set that plan, how do you go about implementing that plan with the player long-term?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Ben, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's all going to start with the medical team. So I think first you got to touch base with like the PTs, the ATs, kind of see what they see on their eval, what they know. I think you need to go, you know, if there's a surgery involved, find out how it went, the reports from the docs or whatever. I think on the most broad level, I think you got to think about what type of injury it is and respect whatever type of tissue, whether it's muscle, tendon, ligament, bone, nerve, whatever it is. Just respect the healing properties of whatever it is you're about to undertake. And then I think, you know, again, on a broad level, you look at whatever the rehab protocol is, whether it's a general one or something from the surgeon. And I think you compare the athlete you have up against the calendar and use that as your starting point. Think about the calendar and does this make sense for the guy I have? And then you set basic goal dates and kind of work backwards. And those are never set in stone, but you know, it's just a good starting point for you.
Yeah. I think one thing I'll add on to that is I always try to find out what kind of person I'm going to be working with. I try to ask for feedback from coaches that have worked with this guy before, trainers, staff members, whoever I can, because I want to know more about their work ethic, their demeanor, their general outlook on life, because I feel like that plays a huge part into how they're going to react to rehab. Because as you guys know, a lot of times these guys are getting pushed out of their comfort level and they're usually in pain every day. So I just want to know what kind of person I'll be working with. You know, we all want the coach's dream to where it's a guy who, you know, he's a good dude to be around. You know, he jokes around, has fun with his life, and you know, he works hard. And then, but I also want to be cognizant and aware of if I'm getting the opposite of that. You know, is it a guy who, you know, doesn't like the weight room? Like, I would like to know that stuff. That way I can prepare myself and maybe realize that this is a different person I'm going to be working with. You know, it's not just a cookie cutter type of drill that I'm going with. And then, like you said, touch base with the medical side of things, make sure previous injury history is covered, because I think that especially in long-term rehab, something that you can work a good bit on. You can create those programs to train their weaknesses as well, especially guys who deal with hamstrings or low back injuries, like this is a time where in rehab you can work on those weaknesses and also educate the player on, you know, this is something you can do in the off season. This is what you can do in season. You know, you can show them different exercises, see what they like. That way they can learn, you know, I like this, this works for me, I'm going to keep doing this. And, you know, hopefully it'll make their career longer at that point and make them more resilient to injury. And then, yeah, like you said, timeline, that's something that you got to know. That's not really etched in stone at all, but you do need to know, like, if you hear somebody's having Tommy John, you got to know that you're going to have them for about a year. Somebody has a pulled hamstring, you got to know that that's maybe a month, maybe a little bit less or more. And then you also got to brush up on your protocols just to make sure that, you know, you're doing what's worked in the past, the past experience with it, or you're doing what needs to be done in general. So I think those are pretty much three keys that I look at.
Yeah, and something I think we both forgot that is kind of obvious, just assessments and previous baselines are obviously huge.
Huge, yeah.
You know, whether it's FMS, wide balance, or specialized movement screens, whatever you and the team choose to use. And then comparing previous baselines, like if it's a lower body injury, like if you have squat numbers or Nordic numbers or RDL, yeah, whatever it is, anything like from the past when they're healthy, as long as it's relatively recent and nothing's happened, is going to be important in setting baselines and functional goals for them to get back to.
100%. Same page right there. You got to know where they were at when they were healthy, because otherwise you're sort of just throwing stuff on the wall and hope it sticks. So agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah. Searching for information. I've gone as far as contacting scouts and getting internal numbers on like home to first times. So like if I'm not sure where a guy's at and he's got a hamstring, like I would go that far to see like, yeah, what does this guy need to get back to? And just, it's just another checkbox for you to be comfortable clearing them to play again.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with a position player too. Like a guy whose game's predicated on speed, like, I mean, he's going to have to be fast coming out of rehab. He's going to have good mechanics as well when he's running. I mean, you got to cover those bases. I mean, that has to happen.
For sure.
Okay, so now that we've established all of these, all very good points, the guy comes in, you've talked to the docs, you've talked to the ATCs, you've got your baseline numbers, you have all this data and you're ready to go. And you meet with the player day one and you lay out the process for him. What are you telling that guy in terms of any injury, whatever it is, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, a week, a year, what does that conversation look like for you with him? Are you laying out, hey, this is tentative goals for you, this is where we want to be? Are you giving them their baseline numbers and saying, hey, we need to get back to these or better? Or like, hey, we might experience setbacks, this is how we're going to deal with it. Like, what does that conversation look like with the player? And is it just you and the player, or are you including other people as well?
When I first talk to guys when they get their programs, I keep it more general with them. Like, obviously, I tell them, like, hey, you're going to do this for the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. But I don't get into specifics after that. I try to be more general, like, this is what we're looking at during your time, you know, 3 months here, 6 months, like it doesn't really equate into anything for me. I just try to keep it just broad form, because this is something to where, like, I'm as a strength coach, I can sort of geek out a little bit when I start talking about their program and, you know, strength phases, power phases, like that, because that's what I'm passionate about. The player, really, he just, in my experience, they just want to be led into what they're doing. They want to be able to know that what they're doing is going to work. So I explain to them, I tell them the purpose why we're doing it and why it's going to work, and then I move on. I try not to address setbacks with them. That's something in my experience to where guys are, they're already constantly thinking about what's going on with their body because they're in pain, and it's something that, you know, and they've played baseball their whole lives for years and years, and now it's suddenly taken away from them because of one, you know, step or one throw. I try to stay away from setbacks as much as I can, as far as mentioning them, because I don't want their mind going to that dark place. I don't want them to sort of have that avalanche of negative thoughts in their head. I try to keep everything positive with them. I try to keep it upbeat with them. And we just pretty much go from there. So.
Yeah, I don't think I never really sat down with guys and just had a big formal meeting at any point. But I think they happen along the way. I think anytime, well, first I would have a formal meeting with our PT. We would do it every Saturday at the end of the week. We'd have Sundays off. And basically we'd review what happened during the week and what's coming up during the next week. And we would hit on every single guy we had, where we'd like to see them at the end of the week. But obviously, again, nothing set in stone. But with the athletes, I think anytime we put in a new phase or exercise or they were hitting a new check mark, it was just, you know, the time I would talk to them was at the beginning of the workout when I explained to them what we had for the day. So I'd explain if something was new, why we're doing it, where I want to see them at a certain point. But I would try to stay away from hard dates because I constantly changed theirs, whether it was tweaking it a little closer or a little further, but always working towards a target date. So I never wanted a guy to get overly caught up with, like, unless he's in the very last leg, like, I would never tell them, hey, we're trying to get you back by Thursday. And so same thing with setbacks. Like, if something bad happened to a guy, or a setback for me could be just the AT saying, hey, I don't think his tissue looks good today. Or, hey, why don't we do their lower body tomorrow instead of today? Like, it might only be a 24-hour thing, or a, hey, let's load him a little less today versus tomorrow. So it could be something as simple as that that doesn't really affect the whole calendar that much. But just involving the athlete, I think, is very important in the process for sure. Because you need them to be open and honest with you, because if they're worried about their calendar changing, they're not going to be honest with you. They're gonna mess around and tell you what you want to hear. And if you can get them to trust you, like, you might feel comfortable speeding them up or realizing, like, it's in their best interest to slow them down by a day or two. Or worst case scenario, if something globally is wrong, then you need to know those things, because you're just wasting time if not.
Yeah, and the players, like, they're sneaky with things. Like, they'll tell you what you want to hear also, because they want to get out back out on the field. You know, their arm be hanging, but they're not going to show you or tell you that. So that's where you got to, like you said, don't give them the hard dates, because they're gonna focus in on that hard date, and they're going to say, whatever I got to do to get to next Monday so I can play 5 innings today or on Monday. They're going to tell you that.
Yeah.
And they'll keep the straight face.
Their feedback's too important part of the process to not have it. And it's too important of a tool.
Yeah.
So let's run down that rabbit hole, because I do have that on my list of questions for you guys. How much say does the athlete have throughout the process with you? In terms of their day-to-day, in terms of their long-term, and then, like you guys said, sometimes they'll just tell you what you want to hear, or they'll look at, you know, if you have two guys doing Tommy John rehab together and you're doing fluid periodization and programming with them, as you guys are discussing, one guy might be progressing a little bit further than the other guy, and the other guy's going, well, why am I not where this guy is? So how are you dealing with that aspect of it, of keeping the athlete involved, engaged, and being a part of the process? And then where do you draw the line on, okay, no, this is still my show to get you to where you need to be. Like, I'm getting paid to do this job to help you. Or is it fully on board of, like, whatever the athlete says goes type of deal?
For me personally, it depends. I mean, not to give you like a cliche answer, but how I approach the rehab process for a grown man, you know, say a 30-year-old with 6 years in the big leagues who has been training with, you know, a reputable training off season, and, you know, he understands his body and knows what works for him. How I approach him and how I approach his process is going to be totally different than, say, a 19-year-old kid who just got drafted in 2019. I mean, that's, to me, I'm going to basically be a teacher for the 19-year-old kid. I'm still going to be teaching him how to squat, hand press, pull, you know, everything that we need to cover in the weight room. Whereas, you know, I'm pretty much going to plan everything for him down to the T, and he's going to have to earn that say in the weight room, which, I'll be honest, there's guys have always earned it, except for I can only think of maybe one person who hasn't earned the right to have a great deal of him into their program. But generally speaking, they do earn that right. And then the grown men, the people who understand and know what works for them and knows what they need to do to be ready to play, those guys, you know, I pretty much just say, hey, like, go do it. Show the young guys what it takes to have big league work ethic. Show guys what it takes in order to get to where their dreams, you know, where they want to be in their life. know, go show them that. I'll still coach those guys up, but you know, I'm not going to completely flip the script on their program. That's the way I look at it. If it works, don't fix it type of thing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think it really depends on each guy. You got to know how each guy, you got to know the level that they're in tune with their body and whether, like, yeah, how much stock to put into what they're saying. And I think if there's things that you need to have hard boundaries on, like, obviously you make the right choice for them. But I think anywhere where there's some gray involved, like, those are the times to have some leeway and use their feedback and their input and their opinions to kind of push them one way or another. You know, whether it's doing one extra day of work capacity stuff before you start doing, like, more intense sprint-based stuff. Whatever it is, like, hey, what do you think about this versus this? You think you're ready or you think we should wait a little bit, play it safe? See what they say. But, again, you're starting with why, and you're just trying to gather more information and obviously keep them part of the process as well.
Yeah, I think keeping them a part of the process is huge. I mean, it's especially with the young guys, because you are educating them more than the guy who has experience. And I mean, the young guys, I mean, they're 19, 20 years old. A lot of them, their training age is simply how long they've been with the organization. Because a lot of guys, they didn't do hard lifting growing up. I mean, they would do, you know, baseball specific type stuff, or at least what they think was baseball specific. So they're maybe lagging a little bit on, you know, different baseline exercises like squatting or deadlifting. So I think once these guys, they show you that they can handle it, then you bring them more into your loop. Then you start to say, you have those conversations where it's, you know, hey, like, you're going to start a power phase here next week, 2 weeks from now. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Would you rather do safety bar squat, or would you rather do, you know, deadlift or whatever it may be? That's when they start having more input and you bring them into the loop as well with their training. And that's also where they start to realize that they're connecting the dots, or they're starting to pick up the breadcrumbs that you're leaving as you're leaving them out for the players. That's where, at least in my experience, that's where they start to learn more, is when you start to ask them questions about things in their own training. So, but again, that has to be earned, in my opinion.
Yeah. Keeping them part of the process is just super important. Like, if you have long-term injuries, or if a guy's out for the year, like, it could be real easy for that guy to become disengaged. Like, if he's losing sight of what he's working for, especially if it's already ruled out that they're not going to get back for the end of the season. So I think any way you can keep them a part of it and keep them motivated. And obviously you're going to have different guys are different than other guys. So it depends on each person individually, but at the end of the day, you just got to keep them moving and working towards something.
Yeah. You got to give them that goal every, however long your training cycle is. I mean, at least this is what I try to do. I try to give them goals at the end of their 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks if they have a longer cycle. And, you know, that's what the goal is for that time, especially if they're not throwing or not hitting or running or anything. Like, that's pretty much what they're working towards for the whole month. So it gives them a little bit of extra motivation.
Making sure they know that they can keep getting better, even if they can't really do baseball-specific work. Like, if a guy has an upper body injury, like, you can still do a lot of safety squat bar stuff. You can do a lot of stuff with vests, like, and vice versa. You can get a lot of really quality upper body work in, even if their lower body's hurt. So, I mean, finding other training effects to keep them going and getting better when they can't be on the field doing what they're actually paid to do is another way to sell them as well.
Yeah, because then that'll keep them coming back to you, because they know you always have a plan for them and that you're always trying to get them better as well, which is huge. That helps create buy-in and set the culture, in my opinion.
Yeah, the two things for me there, one is the idea that, like, if somebody's injured, it's an injured body part, not necessarily an injured body. So you can train other areas to be effective. And then the other one is, John, you're talking about, like, leaving breadcrumbs for guys. And I love that idea of, like, you kind of guide them where you want them to go, but they are the ones making decisions. And then in their mind, they're like, oh, okay, like, I'm a part of the process. Like, this guy cares for me. And then, like you said, it creates the buy-in. And then kind of along that line is, like, accomplishing those goals is, like, these guys are uber competitive, right? And if they're not playing their sport, they need to find somewhere else to have that competitive outlet. So if you give them a goal and they achieve it, granted, it's not on the baseball field, but in their mind, it's getting them closer to the baseball field while still accomplishing that competitive aspect of their nature. I think it's a win-win for everybody. So for me, what I'm understanding from you guys is, although the rehab process is about fixing that area that created the issue, there are bigger picture things that you can accomplish. Young kids, you can educate them on the weight room, on the values of good eating, good sleeping, good habits. Older guys, you can accomplish, keeping those competitive aspects for them so that when they get back into baseball, they haven't gone 8, 10, 12 months without competing for something. They've still done some sort of competing. They've risen to a challenge. They've achieved that challenge. So when they get back on the field, it's not foreign to them to be competing for something at a high level again. So, I mean, you guys can tell me I'm wrong, but that's just kind of what I'm taking from this conversation so far with you guys.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
If the guy's down an arm or a leg, like we would just keep him lifting. And like, even if we couldn't do anything on that side yet, we would call them 3/4 body lifts. And like, it might sound dumb or funny or stupid, but I mean, you really can keep them going pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. If your right arm's hurt, well, guess what? Your left arm and both legs still work. So we're going to work those too. So you ain't getting out of it.
It's going to help them. If you're training the left side, it's going to help the right side come back quicker once you can start doing it again. So
yeah,
like it's kind of a neglected, forgotten thing from your kinesiology classes, but it's a real thing. Like the motor learning connects quicker if you've kept the other side going.
Yep. And when you tell the players that, it like blows their mind. They're like, oh, my throwing arm can still be good if I'm not training it. Like, well, yeah, it's part of it. Like it's science, man.
So everything's been really positive so far about the rehab process, but I know that not everything is all sunshine and rainbows, happy-go-lucky in the process. There are definitely days where you and the player don't see eye to eye. There's definitely setbacks, whether, like Ben said, maybe the AT wants to reel the guy back and push a lift the next day, or something much worse where the guy gets to a point and he starts feeling real pain again. And so I want to know how you guys handle setbacks when they occur. And I know that's broad and there's a bunch of different definitions of setbacks, but just in general, how do you deal with that guy? And also kind of along the same lines, like, how do you deal with the mental side in general of long-term of, hey, I got 12 months. Like, I know I'm not playing. Like, what does this day matter to me 12 months from now with a guy? Or, you know, they come in and they're just not feeling it. Like, how do you get guys through that? How do you click that for them that, hey, we need to work today?
That could be a question that takes up the whole podcast, honestly, because that is something that the mental side of rehab is something that people don't talk about a lot. You know, everybody always talks about, you know, the surgery date, first day throwing, first day lifting, first day on mound, like those physical milestones. Everybody always talks about, like, that's the chatter you hear in the dugout too. Like when somebody hears that so-and-so is getting TJ, like that's what you hear. And that's what the guys talk about. They don't talk too much about the mental side of rehab, which is sort of, the dark horse of it. Cause that can make or break you, I think. Cause everybody has those setbacks. I can't think of any person off the top of my head who went through an entire rehab process, especially the long-term guys who went through an entire rehab process with not having a setback, whether it's major or minor. There's always something that crops up, whether it be like a hamstring or a low back, or maybe their elbow starts to hurt again. You know, there's always something where you have to pump the brakes for a week or two or a little bit longer. And with those guys, I think it comes back to having that good relationship with them, because they, as the strength coach, at least in my experiences, they come to you as the soundboard. You know, guys will come to me and they'll vent about their frustration, their anger. Like that's a part of the coach that I want to be also. So they come to me and like they vent and everything happens. I mean, I've been through the rehab process as well. Like I understand when things go bad and I understand how everything just cascades in your brain. Like you immediately think, oh great, like I'm 2 months back now in my timeline, or I'm not going to make it back, or you know, whatever negative thought pops in their head. that's going to be the first thing that goes in there as soon as their body starts hurting again. And it's just important to keep them optimistic, keep them realistic also with their injury or their setback. Because a lot of guys, they'll either, from what I've seen, they'll go one of two ways. They'll think their world is ending, and that's definitely not good. Or two, the other way they go is it's just like, no big deal. Like, I'll be fine. And those are the guys who generally have the long-term goal in mind. Like, they understand that rehab is a small part of their whole career because everybody wants to make it to the big leagues and actually have a long career. So they understand more that this is just a speed bump in the road. So you got to be positive with them, and you got to meet it head on. And if you, in my eyes, if you have experiences with it, or if you have a coach that you work with who has experience with it, like we have a rehab coach here, Keith Comstock, who I think he's seen every sort of setback you could ever have. You know, he's great at what he does, and he has a lot of experience, and he'll let the guys know. He'll shoot them straight also, which is something great as well that I try to do. You know, don't step around what's going on. Don't try to tiptoe around it. Like, it's happening. It's happening for a reason. There's a reason that your body is barking at you right now. Like, let's pay attention to it. Let's attack it. And, you know, let's reflect on past experiences. That way we can get better at it. You know, hopefully you have an example in mind about a person who has gone through the same thing and now they're okay. You know, hopefully it's not one of those setbacks that's like a career ender or anything like that. Hopefully it's something that guys can bounce back from. And you got to focus on that as a strength coach as well, I think.
Yeah, I think it's another it depends answer. And, you know, first it depends who you're not seeing eye to eye with or where the difference is, whether it's an AT or a player. And then I think you need to seek to understand. You got to figure out where they're coming from and why they do want to push it or why they don't want to push something that day. And you need to compare that against your own rationale and think what's better for their long-term path. And, you know, if it's related to a setback, I think, you know, John, like as we've done this longer and longer, like you just said, like hopefully you can pull from past players or having seen it before, and you can speak from wisdom rather than knowledge, and you can really reassure a guy that, you know, usually, obviously there's rare cases, but usually when there's a setback, like everything's going to be okay. Like it might not even change that much for him. So I think just reassuring them that everything's normal, everything's going to be all right, that it's not going to affect the day they get back, or it's not going to change that much about when they're getting back. As long as you're being honest and genuine with them, I think that's what goes the longest. Yeah. But trust is the big thing.
Yeah. Trust and respect, I think. They got to, even if they don't like you, they got to know you that you're there for them and you're trying to get them better.
Yeah, I think for me, the big thing here is that obviously we don't want injuries to happen, right? Like everybody wants everyone to have a healthy, long career, play it out, and then, you know, retire on their own terms. But the reality is that it just doesn't happen like that. There are injuries that come up. Sometimes they're fluky. Sometimes they're not. Like, it just happens. And so I think it's important that we have these conversations about the rehab process as a whole, and then more specifically the quote unquote dark side of the mental side of it. And like you said, John, for me, I think it could be a make or break thing. There's some guys that are so competitive, so locked in, that if they have a major setback, they'll be fine. And then there are some guys that are a little bit mentally weak, and they have the minor, like the lightest setback, and it's like life changing for them. And how you go about presenting yourself to those guys and presenting that the big picture is the big picture and they're still going to be okay really does make a difference in the process. And so for me, like, part of the thing for you guys being, you know, rehab coaches at one time or another in your career is, yes, you have to know the body, you have to understand how all of that works, how the long-term process is going to play out and healing and things like that, but you have to be a damn good communicator too, because if you can't get through to a guy, it does not matter what your process looks like. If he doesn't trust you, if he doesn't buy into what you're saying, there's nothing that you're going to do that's going to change that. And so I think that's a really underappreciated part of whether it's the rehab coach on the baseball side, the rehab coach on the strength side, the rehab guy on the ATC, whoever it is, you know, all the people involved in the rehab process, have to be really good communicators within each other and with the player as well.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the last thing I want to talk about here is how the rehab process maybe changes or doesn't change based on being at an affiliate versus being at the complex. So Ben, you had kind of started at the rehab situation down in Fort Myers and now have branched out to an affiliate, and you've seen the rehab process on both sides. And John, you've kind of flipped. You were affiliate level first, and now you're the rehab guy with the Rangers. So you're at the complex year round doing those rehabs. So just talk on the differences that you've seen just between being at an affiliate, doing a rehab for a guy, and being at your complex and doing a rehab for a guy.
Yeah, I think one of the big ones is you eliminate the barrier of the guy needing to travel to get back and potentially needing to wait for a roster space. So the barrier to reentry and getting back on the field is that much simpler. So at the same time, you need to keep a guy in check and make sure that when you put him back in the field, it's the right time to actually do it. And, you know, there could be more of a push to try to get back when you're actually at the affiliate versus when you're at the complex. And I think that's just something you need to know how to manage. And, you know, I think there's one time in my career when I pushed a guy back at an affiliate a little before he was ready. And, you know, it still haunts me, even though it was a couple of years ago. And, you know, I think it's just the main thing is keeping everything in check, just making sure everything stays on track the way it's supposed to. And you trust your eyes the way, you know, it's backwards for you, John, but I need to trust my eyes the way that I used them when I was down in Fort Myers.
Yeah. Now having gone affiliate to complex, I know with affiliate, we would get communication, you know, email or phone calls from either the big league side or maybe the higher levels. And, you know, they would let us know that, you know, the person coming down, they need to get this many hard sprints or this much yardage of sprinting. They need to have so-and-so ABs. You know, they have these set number of lifts that they need to have while you're there. And here's their lifting program. Here's the conditioning they do. I mean, they would lay out everything that we needed to do as the affiliate strength coach. And on our end, it was just about execution. You know, building that relationship with the player, letting them know, like, you're there for them. Let me know if you need anything. Let me know if we need to modify anything. And then just execute the program and make sure everything was getting checked off. You know, if a guy, for example, say if you needed to run 5 hard 90s that day, you know, or 3 hard 90s, you know, maybe one for every AB or maybe a hard double. And if he didn't get that, if he didn't get that volume that day, we would keep him after the game and we'd have him run, you know, hard 90s after the game. We would just keep him hot, you know, maybe do another dynamic again to make sure nothing would happen while he was running. And we would accumulate volume that way. That way we could still check the box and make sure that he was still on track in order to get back to his original, you know, affiliate or back to the big leagues. Whereas now with in the complex, I'm the one who has a large hand. Me and the PT, you know, me and him come up with the progressions and the volumes that guys need to hit before they return back to play or before they return back to their affiliate. And then, you know, for example, like we're there for all the mound progressions. It's much more, I guess, hands-on is probably the best way to put it. You know, there's a lot more thinking involved with it, which is what I love. That's part of why I made the change, is because there's, you know, you get more hands-on with it and you have the ability to have a greater change in the rehab process instead of just being at the affiliate and having everything sent to you. So that's pretty much where, in my experience, how it sort of on its head a little bit.
Yeah, I guess we probably could have prefaced it a bit in case people don't understand, is at the affiliate, it seems like you're less likely to do a long-term rehab, right? Like if a guy's in your everyday lineup, he's got a little bit of a hamstring issue, maybe he misses a week or two and he comes back, and in that time you're progressing him. Or even if it is a long-term rehab, it might be a guy who's just checking the boxes at the affiliates along the way. So you get, like you said, you get a plan from, you know, the guy above you or in the big leagues or whatever, like, hey, so-and-so big leaguer is coming to your affiliate for a weekend series. He needs to do this, this, this. Versus being at the complex is usually where your long-term rehabs go, right? Like if a guy has TJ, he's not going to go to an affiliate right away and do, you know, 6 months of work during the minor league season at your high A place. Like, he's going to be at the complex. And so that, I would assume that probably makes the processes and who you talk to and things like that a little bit different, just long-term outlook versus a quick, like, hey, we got a week where this guy's on the shelf. We need to do this, this, this to clean him up.
Yeah. I think going off that too, I think one of the things I forgot, one of the dangerous things, especially with like soft tissue injuries, like with more like fast twitchy muscles, like the hamstrings and the obliques, like those are going to feel better before they're ready to go. So there's like this little window where the guy feels good and he wants to play that day, but they probably need another half week to a full week before, like, you can really feel comfortable letting him sprint multiple times or rotate like full on. So I think keeping that in check and just reminding guys, hey, you're going to feel good before you're ready. And yeah, I think addressing it before you actually get to it and they start pushing so that they know it's coming and give them a warning, I think that's one of the big keys with those kind of injuries.
Yeah, 100%. Because that definitely happens all the time. Dudes feel good and they want to push it. You know, they think they're ready to get back. Whereas, you know, you know as a coach that you got to pump the brakes a little bit. Like, maybe just give it a few more days type of thing. So,
guys, I know I said that would be my last question. I'm definitely lying to you. We're going to keep going. So hopefully you don't mind. But is there anything that you've learned, like looking back at, you know, the process of rehab with certain guys that you're like, damn, I would really do this differently, or I really did this well, like I need to keep doing this with guys. Is there anything that you've learned along the way, and kind of in the same boat, like, has your philosophy on the rehab process changed, or do you still have kind of a general overarching philosophy that guides you with each situation, regardless of if it's long-term, short-term, upper body, lower body, things like that?
Yeah, I think in 2016, I was kind of getting my feet wet with the rehab. I was managing GCL2, so I was kind of figuring things out. I split the programming with our coordinator back then. You know, and just being eager and, you know, the eager 24-year-old I was, I remember going into that off season between 16 and 17, and I really wanted to, I called it that I was front loading the work. I wanted to find all the most common injuries we had. I wanted to lay out templates for them so that when guys came, they were ready to go. And I had an answer for everything that happened. Well, in 2017, I think one of the things I learned was, I had two TJs. One was a rookie ball guy. One was a big leaguer. One was hypermobile. One was hypomobile. One had Andrews. One had Alchek. So very different rehab protocols. One's immobilized for pretty much, I want to say it was like 4-8 weeks. I can't remember exactly what it was. And the other one can start moving their arm right away. So they're just varying rehab protocols. One was a weight room warrior, and the other one you kind of needed to motivate a little more. So like I had two guys that were very similar timelines that couldn't have been more different in terms of same surgery, but different surgeries and very different guys and where they were in their careers and how the rehabs were going to progress. So I immediately, I started having this eye-opening. It was eye-opening for me because I realized like you really can't do that. You really can't. If you're planning more than 3, 4, 5 weeks out, I think you're wrong. Like it's good to have goals and things you're working towards, but as far as putting exercises to paper, like I started realizing there was a better way to do it. And at the time I thought I was kind of making up like the type of periodizations I was using. So I think you can sum rehab up with you're trying to get guys back to where their patterns were before the injury. Whether it's push, pull, squat, hinge, rotate, run, whatever it is, like you need to get them back to their baselines and do all the things they can so that they can get back on the field, right? So I think each one of those patterns has their own set of mobility, stability, strength demands, and they all have their own progressions. So I've come to learn that people call it fluid periodization, agile periodization, super training calls it like cyber kinetic fluid, some crazy words, but like just basically the idea that you have goals you know, the IT world uses Agile. I think it's called Waterfall versus Agile planning. So Waterfall is like your Tutor Bomba books where like powerlifter plans out their next 16 weeks and they try sticking to this plan, where Agile and Fluid is you kind of write the program. I don't want to say it's just, you're just making something on the spot, because there's definitely systems to it. And I follow a lot of sets of progressions, but basically I'd talk to the AT, the PT, Kevin, at the end of the week, and we'd lay out plans and goals for the guys. And then I'd talk to the athlete when he came in, get an update on how the treatment went that day. And then based on the progressions and the loading schemes that I was using, it would kind of loosely be like a linear plan, like a linear periodization plan, but intelligently thought out, if that makes sense. So basically we would make the program. I'd already know what I was going to do with the guy, but I would alter it based on how they feel and how the AT thinks they feel. John, I don't know if you can build on that, but basically I think just the longer you plan out, the more you're going to have to, the more you're screwing yourself, and you're going to have to go back and do it again, because things just change too much in the rehab process.
Yeah. Same page right there, man. Cause like, if you're right, if you go to plan, I think anything longer than like 5 weeks, you know, like when they go home from between like, say, Thanksgiving and Christmas is like the longest in long-term rehab. That's like the longest they'll ever be on their own. That's like the longest you can ever plan for, in my opinion. If you go 6 week plan to another 6 week plan, like there's a lot of stuff that can happen in those 6 weeks. Like, you know, what are you going to do week one? If a player comes to you and says, I don't really like barbell RDL. Like I kind of feel like pinching my back a little bit. Well, it's like, well, okay. So you got to change up your plan, obviously. But now what does that do for the rest of your program? Because there's a lot of different interchanging parts in there. So if you plan out like 6 weeks, I mean, you just created a lot of work for yourself. And now also the player is like, why doesn't my coach know me a little bit? But you're right. Like I also kind of sort of go loosely linear with everything. I mean, there is I do strength phases, power phases. At the beginning of long-term rehab, we do a little bit more work capacity / hypertrophy, if that's also what you would like to call it. But I mean, we're basically building towards something for 4 to 8 weeks at a time, but we only plan out 4 weeks, because I want my guys to also tell me like, hey, I don't like this variation, I would like to do this one type of thing. And it also, going back to like the programming has changed a lot just from like my time as a GA, where as a GA I was in charge of baseball, and we had 2 or 3 TJs. We had a kid whose shoulder basically blew up on him, had a couple ACLs and meniscus. And I remember going back and looking at those programs, and it was like archaic, like where I was wondering myself, why would I have my players do that type of thing? Whereas now, not only do I reflect on every program that we do, I want to see, you know, do the guys respond to this? Do they like this? Are testing measures showing that we're getting the adaptation we want? But I also reflect just upon how things went in general. Like, did it flow well? Was it something where I had to be there spotting them at all times, which, you know, is not ideal when you have a full room of rehabbing athletes. Like, you, in my opinion, need to be able to float around a little bit. You could be attached at the hip with somebody. So I was just thinking back to programming. I mean, I just started, when you mentioned it, I just started thinking about everything in the past that I've done, and like reflecting upon it and thinking to myself how much it's really changed. Cause now the things that are right for our guys now, like it's a lot different just based from just off of 2 years ago. I mean, there are things that I do now that I never even would have thought of doing a few years back. So it's definitely a constant changing process. And, you know, then you also work with the ATs and the PTs, who also, they need to be on the same page as you as well. Cause I mean, you guys work together, you're a team. What you're doing in the weight room also needs to mesh up with what they're doing and what they think the player is ready for. Cause you can't just go rogue on them. I mean, that's not going to help anybody, and it's probably going to hurt the player in the long run.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you're going to have the right exercise for the right guy at the right time. And you know, a guy with a lower body injury might have to work on a single leg hop for a couple of weeks. Like, it might be so basic for them that you got to progress to, you know, more advanced, like higher jumps or triple jumps or whatever it is, you know, because at the same time, like, even if you might bring a guy out and tell him to do a 30-yard strider just to see where they're at the first day they run again. And if a guy has a grade one pull or something and they don't need to go through a full 2-3 week running progression, then, like, as long as you see them do a rep or two, like, you might change the plan and have them do something longer or maybe a little quicker than you intended on once you actually see it. So I think, you know, guys don't want to be babied. Like, if you bring that guy out for the 30-yard strider and they can do something a little better, a little longer, a little quicker, whatever it is, but you pump the brakes. Sometimes you do need to pump the brakes, but if you pump a brake when they clearly can do something more, then, you know, they're going to feel babied. And if they feel babied, they're not going to trust you. So it's finding the right times to push guys and the right time to hold them back is the balance you're trying to keep. And keep the big picture in mind. And whenever you're not sure which way to go, always be a little more cautious. Because at the end of the day, any major setback is going to cost them a lot more time than what going a little further or pushing a little bit harder, but going too far is going to cost them. So,
yeah, I think I forgot to mention too, like, progressions. I mentioned having progressions for everything or for most things. That's huge. Like, you got to have, especially in long-term rehab, you got to have an idea of, you know, your squat progression, how it's going to lay out for, you know, ours is, you know, from week 6 of TJ all the way to week 24, it's pretty much mapped out. I mean, I know what they're going to do. I know when they're going to do it. But also, and it's all working towards a goal as well. Same thing for deadlifts, same thing for Nordics. And then, you know, their upper body pressing is also mapped out too. Running progressions, I'd say, is definitely a lot more tricky. Personally, I try to only, like, schedule out maybe like 2 or 3 days in advance, because, like you said, if it's a, you know, a minor thing and you get them out there and they show they can already handle the stress, you know, like, they look good, their speed's good, no gait issues, you know, you can push them a little bit. Like, let them also determine their own progression with things. You know, it's something to where, like you said, if you hold a guy back, you know, that's going to be something that's going to damage your relationship with them. They're not going to trust you as much. Cause like you said, all these guys are competitors. They all want to be pushed, and you just got to find how hard to push them for any given day. So that's huge. You got to have your progressions. Let them show you what they can handle, and hopefully they can show you more.
Yeah. When I'd sit down with the PT and we talk about things, like, we might talk about how, you know, by the end of the week, I'm hoping this guy's going to base run, or I'm hoping we can get to agilities, or I'm hoping we can get to this stage of work capacity. And, you know, when you're working back, I like picking a date in my head, but when I communicate it to anyone that's not the PT, I like giving a little range. Like, I like saying, hey, I think he'll be back early this week, but I try not to tie myself down because I want the freedom to adjust it by a day or two so that I'm not locked in on, hey, I told you he's playing on Tuesday. Like, we got to get him back on Tuesday. Like, if I think he needs another day before we do base running, then we're going to give him the extra day. Until front office needs to know an exact date so that they can make a roster move, like, you just want to be as flexible as you can. Sometimes you got to make a tough call towards the end, but I mean, I think as long as you keep yourself flexible to what the final dates are, you're going to put yourself in the best position.
Yeah, 100%. Because they're also going to hold you to that as well. If you come out and you say they're going to be ready by April 7th, well, you just gave yourself a deadline. Like, it's April 7th, or you're going to look like you don't know what you're doing, or you're bad at your job, which nobody wants.
Exactly.
Guys, this has been really, really awesome. And I hope it's been really enlightening for the listeners. I know it has for me. I'm the first to admit that the rehab side is not really a strong suit of mine, or like something that I'm overly eager to do in the sense of like the long-term stuff like you guys are. I think there are specific people that really enjoy that role and do really well at it. And it sounds like you guys were knocking it out of the park. And I love that you've reflected on past processes and you're not afraid to admit that sometimes things didn't work. You know, Ben, you brought up, I had a specific guy that still haunts me 2 years later. You know, it's part of the process for me of rehab again is like, you know, injuries are going to happen. You know, setbacks are going to happen. You just have to get through those, and the players have to get through it and the coaches have to get through it too. You know, it's hard on the strength coach, even at the affiliate for me doing a rehab with a guy and I want to see him come back. Like you guys say, I want you back by Friday. And then on Thursday he comes in and he's like, I'm not feeling it, man. I'm not ready to go. And you're like, you feel terrible that you can't get the guy back out there playing on the field because that's what he wants to do. Right. So being able to hear you guys say that you can handle this, you love the job, you love doing that aspect of the thing, and reflecting on it, without judging yourselves for it is really awesome for me to hear. The last thing I need from you guys is just closing thoughts. We've been at it for almost an hour now, and I think we've covered a lot of really good ground. But if there's anything that you want to leave the listeners with or anything that you haven't touched on yet that you want to make sure people hear, basically speak now or forever hold your peace.
Yeah, I think for me, I think I wouldn't have been able to accomplish the things that I was able to accomplish when I was in rehab if I thought I was doing it by myself. And I think one of the most important things was the relationship I had with the trainers and the PT, with Kevin Avila and Brandon Henry, Dave Herrera, Joel Harris, Jason Bartley. You know, if I didn't have those guys, then like I wouldn't have been able to do it. Like honestly, I felt like we'd work through each other and kind of collaborate on everything. But if it's a one-man team, it's never going to work. So between having the medical staff and having, you know, player input, like it really is a team-oriented process.
Yeah, I second that one right there. That's truest words I've heard all day. I'll say closing words for all the strength coaches is – sometimes you're going to get saddled with things that make you uncomfortable. I know when I was a GA and I had all those guys who were hurt, you know, I didn't know what to do, but you know, it's important to take things and take them in stride as a challenge, as an opportunity to end up learning. Cause you know, a few years down the line, it could be something that helps separate you from the pack, or it could be something that helps you, you know, reach a player who you're not going to reach before or who you wouldn't have reached before. So it's something where, take everything in stride, take it as an opportunity to learn something and in order to make yourself a better coach, because you never know where you're going to be at in a few years. You know, maybe an experience that you basically build your career around. So just keep an open mind and keep grinding and keep working and just get after it when you can.
Yeah, I reserve the right to change my mind about how I feel about doing rehab. So you never know, maybe someday I'll be I'll be in the spot that you guys are. It sounds like you guys really enjoy it, so maybe I can be persuaded, but for now I'll stick to doing the other stuff. But guys, I appreciate you coming on, spending, you know, like I said, about an hour of time with me. Stay safe and I will talk to you guys soon.
Sounds good, appreciate it.
All right, have fun guys, see ya.
All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Ben and John. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was really cool to hear them talk about the rehab process. Obviously, you can tell they're very, very passionate about it and about helping players get back to being in games and returning from injuries. And it was great to hear their perspectives on affiliate life versus complex life and discussing the mental side of rehab. And really, there was just a ton of good information in this episode, so I hope you enjoyed it. The three things that I took from these guys in this episode: make sure everyone is on the same page. Rehab is more than just sets and reps for an injured body part. And reflect on your previous programs and decisions to help inform you for future decisions. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.